The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Now, James, there are rumours swirling of a Brexit deal. What do we know?
Well, we know that the UK has made an offer on fish, which has become the single biggest sticking point. But as always with Brexit, things are never that simple. The UK offer on fish, it is a move from the previous UK position. It envisages a five-year transition period. The UK doesn't reclaim as much of the fish that the EU currently fishes in UK waters as it had previously insisted it wanted. But the early signs are that the EU is not going to kind of simply accept the UK's offer. Those very familiar with the French thinking on the matter say that they want more on fish, and that there are also some level playing field issues that they want sorted out first. So I think we are in the final throes of this thing yet, but there's no white smoke yet. I think on the timing it is worth reflecting on this, which is realistically you will have to have a vote in the UK Parliament on this by the 30th of December. So even if you think that the EU Council is prepared to provisionally apply this just on a simple council decision rather than going to the Parliament, which is what I think would now have to take place, the time is getting properly short if this isn't fixed before Christmas, given that people think it takes 2 days for kind of legal scrubbing and the like. So we are going to know sooner rather than later whether it is deal or no deal. I do think that the two sides, actually particularly the European side, need to reflect now on whether they are prepared to upend the whole thing over what is a relatively small amount of fish, you know, 100 million or so euros a year of fish. I mean, obviously it has a political totemic significance, but there's no doubt that the UK side have moved now. I think, you know, the EU side, and particularly the French and the Danes, need to reflect on whether they wish to inject all the poison that no deal would create in terms of UK-EU relations over this issue when the UK has moved in the way that it has.
Katie, what do we know about the approval process in Parliament if there is a deal?
So we know that there is going to be a vote, but then I think when you get to whether or not there needs to be a vote, it's not clear that you actually would have to have Parliament do an up-down vote on this. Instead, one of the difficulties for Labour in working out how they're going to vote for this deal is not quite clear yet what form the vote will be. So it might not just be a, you know, do you support this Brexit deal? It could be that we need to see, but it could also be a, do we support this part? And then it could get trickier for an opposition because it's drawing parts out. But clearly, as James says, time is limited. So if, as we are expecting, if there is a deal and that is voted on the 30th, there isn't going to be too much time to go into it in great detail. And therefore, no matter the exact form of the vote, you have a situation where a lot of Tory MPs want time for scrutiny. They want particularly the Brexiteers, member of the ERG, they want time to go over this to make sure there's nothing that they don't like, particularly on the more complex parts relating to EU law, looking at level playing field and so forth. And therefore, I think the question is, if we do get a deal around the 24th, which I think is seen as a crucial date for maybe getting a Brexit deal, though we have heard about crucial dates previously, we need to then know what amount of time MPs are going to have to go through that before they would have to vote in it technically on the 30th. And then in terms of voting, I would be personally surprised if you saw a great influx of MPs in Parliament to vote on it. I think for a few reasons, a proxy voting is already pretty dominant. Parliament's been pretty quiet recently because of that, and secondly, tier four I think in London means that a lot of MPs and also the House of Commons Speaker I think are going to be sceptical about the idea that everyone needs to come down. Now I think one thing to watch for if there is a Brexit deal is, do you suddenly have some MPs who haven't been that present wanting to come in to show their constituents they're voting for it in person, or is it still going to be fairly slim?
James, yesterday at the Downing Street press conference, Grant Shapps and the Prime Minister were boasting about the number of lorries they'd managed to get the queue in Dover down to. And it seems that either they were being slightly inaccurate or a lot more lorries have turned up in the past few hours. But what's going on?
I think it is a combination of those two factors. I mean, given how many were there by yesterday evening, it's hard to imagine those figures of 174 lorries, I think it was, that we were given in the Downing Street press conference, were not out of date. And then I think the second problem is, as you get nearer to Christmas, there are more lorry drivers driving home for Christmas, essentially. They are heading back, having done their final deliveries. And I think this is getting very difficult. I think there is also this big issue now about, you know, everyone seems to agree that what you need is a COVID test for these drivers before they get on the ferries and head to France. The difficulty is what type of COVID test to have. The UK would like them to have lateral flow tests that give kind of rapid results, so you really could turn things around quickly. The French would prefer PCR tests, which pick up people with lower levels of... The theory about lateral flow tests is that they tend only to pick up people at their most infectious. So they miss lots of milder cases of people who could still spread the disease, even if not as vigorously as others. And I think the French would like them to take these PCR tests. The problem is that those require a lab and they take longer to turn around. So you would be looking at, you know, 24 hours or so to get the results back. Obviously, if every lorry driver has to wait 24 hours to get a test result back before they head out from Kent onto the ferry at Dover, that is going to lead to delays and tailbacks. So I think we are still in a haggling stage about how best to do this. The European Commission has urged EU member states now, you know, say, look, let's discourage non-essential travel from the UK, but essential freight journeys, accompanied freight, so e.g. lorries, it is encouraging states to allow those, not to take the position that the French have taken so far.
Katie, how difficult politically is this for Boris Johnson? The images don't look great, do they?
I mean, I think it depends what angle you look at it. I think, in a way, who do people blame for this? If the Prime Minister has announced, you know, new curbs and alerted countries to a new, more infectious, more contagious strain of the coronavirus, then actually I think a lot of people think that was the responsible thing to do, and therefore the consequences from that are perhaps inevitable, or countries are being heavy-handed. However, I think there is a concern on the industry side of those businesses which are being affected by this, which is, did the government not anticipate that their strong words on this could lead to this kind of response? Because it seems to have taken the UK government by surprise, and you keep hearing that at the moment in terms of how long the ban is going on for, but also that it happened in the first place. So was there some naivety in that, in the effect that press conference and later interviews and so forth would have? And then I think in terms of the general public response at the moment, this isn't hitting I think the public at large in the sense that you're yet to see what we're hearing about, which is, you know, a squeeze on supply chains. But it has led to obviously warnings that we could be having food shortages, and you've had to see again once more people saying do not go and stockpile. I think that's having a limited effect depending on what part of London you are in. But if this continues and we do start to seeing those supply chain issues, people are facing shortages in terms of fresh food, then I think the backlash could grow, whether fair or not.
James, finally, we've had an announcement of some further nominations for the peerage today. We've got Peter Crodas, Tory donor, who is the one who's excited the most attention from the list that's been published by Downing Street, not least because the commission scrutinising these appointments said that he shouldn't have been appointed. Why has Boris Johnson ignored them?
It's a very good question as well. And Boris Johnson has put out the letter that he wrote to the House of Lords Appointment Commission explaining why he was not accepting their advice. Now, that is within his powers to do that, but it obviously doesn't look good for him to overrule the independent commission on this, chaired by Lord Bew. Boris Johnson's essential argument is that this all, that Peter Crodas' issues with the House of Lords date back to a series of allegations about cash for access in the Sunday Times. Boris Johnson argues that he won that libel case, and that that internal Conservative Party investigation found that he had done nothing wrong. And, you know, Peter Crudas has made a huge amount of his life despite not having come from very much. He has a kind of line in there about, you know, not having had lots of advantages that other members of the House of Lords have. I still think, though, it is immensely difficult for the Prime Minister to overrule the House of Lords Appointments Commission in this way, and especially for someone who is a Tory party and vote leave donor. That is going to be problematic. I also think that, you know, there is a problem here in that it's another set of peerages being appointed. Boris Johnson has appointed a lot of peers in his first year in charge. Norman Fowler, the Lord Speaker, has made quite clear that, you know, he is deeply unhappy about this and wished that Boris Johnson stuck to kind of Theresa May's policy of restraint on creating new peers. So I think it is, relations between this government and the House of Lords are not easy already. Look at the number of how the Lords push back on the government on the internal markets bill, for example, and things like that. I think this latest peerage list is just going to worsen relations between this government and the Lords.
Katie, wasn't this government planning to reform the House of Lords? There was quite a lot of chat about moving it to York and making it a number of really exciting radical changes. Is that all gone?
Yeah, so there's lots of talk about reform, and yes, moving it to York, along with there are plans also we've heard about moving parts of the Treasury to Leeds, perhaps the gender inequalities brief to Leeds, and so forth. I mean, I don't think this is gone, but I do think it's one of those things where we heard it from Theresa May too. You hear it from prime ministers when they first come in. They talk about wanting to get rid of cronyism and to almost reform the system. But yet it tends to be the case that, you know, within 6 months that they're doing the very thing that in the past they've criticised others for. I do think on the Piers and Boris Johnson, what his team have been fairly consistent on, although some of those around him, is that they would like to see more Leave voters in the House of Lords. They want to see more Brexiteers there. And if you think back to all the Brexit wars of the past 2 to 3 years, there was always a sense that the Lords had a ratio which is outnumbered and not representative. So I think there's something there which is consistent, but ultimately I think when you're looking at the general reform, I think that you do wonder if some people in this government might criticise it if it was another government doing it.
Thank you, Katie, and thank you, James, and thank you for listening.